The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome back, everyone, to the deep dive.
Oh.
Today, we are really digging into a landmark work. It's a book that shaped so much of how we understand the darkest parts of the 20th century.
We're talking about Hannah Arendt's The Origins of Totalitarianism.
Exactly. And it's a challenging read, but incredibly important.
Definitely. Arendt was grappling with this absolutely terrifying question that hung over everything after World War II.
Which was how?
Just how could the Holocaust, the gulags, these unprecedented horrors, how could they happen right in the middle of modern, supposedly civilized Europe?
It wasn't supposed to happen there, right? That's the shock.
Precisely.
So Arendt isn't just recounting events. She's performing what she calls a kind of political autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
Her big argument, and we'll unpack this, is that totalitarianism, think Nazi Germany, Stalinist Russia, wasn't just, you know, a worse version of tyranny.
No, not just dictatorship turned up to 11.
Right. She argued it was fundamentally new, a catastrophic new form of government that needed a whole new way of thinking about it.
And our goal today is basically to follow her trail, see how she believed these systems were constructed, ideologically speaking.
Okay, so before we dive into the what, let's talk about the who. Hannah Arendt.
Yes. Understanding her is key to understanding the book. She was born in Germany, 1906, a German-Jewish political philosopher.
And studied under some really major figures, Heidegger, Jaspers.
That's right. But her personal history is just inseparable from her ideas here.
Because she lived through it.
Directly. She had to flee Nazi Germany in 1933, lived for years stateless, a refugee, first in France, then managed to escape to the U.S. in 1941.
Imagine that experience. Losing your country, your rights, seeing the entire system just crumble.
It gave her this incredibly unique perspective. She wasn't just an academic observing from afar. She experienced the collapse, the trauma of it.
She called herself a conscious pariah, didn't she?
Yes, embracing that outsider status. She felt it gave her a kind of clarity. Maybe seeing patterns that others still comfortable within their national identities might have missed.
So it's this blend of like rigorous philosophical training and really raw lived experience.
Exactly. That combination is what makes her analysis so powerful, I think.
Okay, let's get into the book's core argument then. What is totalitarianism, according to Arendt?
Well, she argues it's not just about power. Nazism and Stalinism, they aimed for, believe it or not, total global domination.
Okay, ambitious.
And maybe even more chillingly, the complete transformation of human nature itself.
Whoa, okay, unpack that. Transformation how?
A traditional dictator wants you to obey, maybe fear them. Totalitarianism, Arendt says, wants to eliminate what makes us human. Our spontaneity, our individuality, our ability to think for ourselves.
It wants to remake reality.
Essentially, yes. To fit its own often insane ideology, to make actual individual humans kind of obsolete, unnecessary.
That's a terrifying thought.
It is. And she argues this didn't just appear out of nowhere. It wasn't random.
Right. She traces its roots back.
Yes. She sees it as a result of different forces converging, things that had been weakening the foundations of the European nation-state system for a long time.
And the book is structured around these roots, right? Parts one and two.
Exactly. She points to two maybe seemingly unconnected 19th century developments.
Okay, what are they?
First, the rise of modern political anti-Semitism. Not just religious prejudice, but anti-Semitism used as a tool for mass mobilization.
Okay, that's part one.
And second, the logic and practices of overseas imperialism, particularly in Africa. That's part two.
And how do these connect to totalitarianism?
Arendt's argument is that these two forces, anti-Semitism and imperialism, they created the crucial precondition.
Which was?
The emergence of the masses. Large groups of people feeling utterly alone, rootless, disconnected, and maybe most disturbingly, feeling superfluous.
Superfluous meaning?
Meaning economically useless and politically homeless.
Yeah. Like
they just didn't matter.
Wow. Okay, let's tackle part I then. Anti-Semitism as a political tool.
Right. Arendt is really careful to distinguish this modern form from older religious anti-Judaism. This was different.
How so?
Well, after Jewish emancipation in Europe, Jewish populations ended up in this really strange contradictory position.
Contradictory how?
On the one hand, they were often involved in state finance, banking, administrations, things crucial to the modern state. This made them targets for revolutionaries who hated the state apparatus.
Okay, so targeted by the anti-establishment side.
But at the same time, they didn't have their own nation-state. This made them suspect to nationalists, who were increasingly demanding total loyalty to one national identity.
So targeted by the nationalists, too. Caught in the middle.
Exactly. This ambiguity, this in-betweenness, made them, in Arndt's view, the perfect scapegoat for everything wrong with society, whether it was capitalism, the state, or lack of national purity.
A convenient target for everyone's grievances.
Pretty much. And she points to a specific historical event as being crucial here.
The Dreyfus Affair in France.
Yes. Late 19th century. She calls it a dress rehearsal for totalitarian tactics.
That's a strong phrase. Why a dress rehearsal? It was a spy scandal, a miscarriage of justice.
Because, for Arndt, it showed something new. It showed how the mob, these disconnected, angry elements of society, could be mobilized by a powerful, persistent lie, an anti-Semitic lie.
So it wasn't just about Dreyfus himself.
No. The campaign against him was really an attack on the core values of the French Republic. Justice, truth, individual rights. It proved, she argued, that if you repeat a lie often enough and use it to attack the very idea of factual reality, that lie can become a potent political force. It could undermine the whole system.
So it was a test case for destroying truth through ideology.
A chillingly successful one, in her view.
Okay. That leads us to the second route she identifies, imperialism, part two. She calls it the laboratory of violence.
Yes. The scramble for Africa especially. This wasn't just about flags on maps. It was driven by, well, excess capital looking for investments.
Money needing a place to go.
Right. And the European bourgeoisie seeking political power, extending their influence beyond the continent. But it was also, she says, an outlet for superfluous men.
There's that word again. Who were these superfluous men?
The adventurers, the unemployed, the people who didn't quite fit in back home. In the colonies, far from the legal and moral checks of Europe, they could find power. Purpose.
And operate without the usual constraints.
Exactly. The rule of law often just dissolved. And Arndt says two key precursors to totalitarian rule really developed there.
What were they?
First, rule by arbitrary decree, by administrators who answered to nobody on the ground. She calls this the rise of bureaucracy as unaccountable power.
Just orders from afar, no local accountability.
Pretty much. And second, the hardening of racism into a full-blown ideology.
Why then?
To justify the brutality.
Yeah.
To justify dominating and exploiting entire populations for resources. You needed an ideology that said these people weren't fully human, that their lives didn't matter, that limitless violence against them was acceptable.
The idea that some lives are inherently worthless
was practiced and normalized in the colonies. Think of the massacres, the concentration camps used against the Boers in South Africa. These methods were tested out there.
And her crucial point is that this mindset, this toolkit of bureaucratic control and racist ideology,
it didn't stay in Africa or Asia. It was brought back to Europe. The methods and the mentality were eventually turned inward against Europeans themselves.
That's the terrifying boomerang effect she describes.
Precisely. Which brings us to part three, totalitarianism itself. The fusion of these elements after the shattering experience of World War I.
The war just blew everything apart.
It destroyed the old class structures, created unimaginable trauma, and intensified that feeling of rootlessness. This, Arndt says, created the masses in their modern form.
These aren't classes, not citizens in the old sense.
No, they're atomized individuals, isolated, lonely, feeling politically powerless and insignificant, deeply vulnerable.
And thirsty for.
What?
Meaning belonging.
Exactly. They were hungry for some all-encompassing story, some ideology that could explain everything, give them a sense of purpose, identity, and community, even if it was a fictional one.
This is where Nazism and Stalinism come in. But they seem so different, one based on race, the other on class and history. How does she group them?
She argues the specific content of the ideology, whether it's race science or Marxist historical laws, is actually secondary.
Secondary to what?
To its function. Both ideologies claim to be executing some inevitable external law, the law of nature for the Nazis, the law of history for the Stalinists, something beyond mere human politics.
A law that justified everything they did.
Everything. And the mechanisms they used were strikingly similar. Propaganda aimed at the outside world to confuse and attract.
And internally.
Terror. She insists terror is the essence of totalitarian rule, not just a tool.
What does she mean by essence?
It's not just about scaring or eliminating opponents. It's about destroying human plurality. The very fact that we are all unique individuals capable of starting something new, thinking something different. Terror aims to make everyone interchangeable, predictable, and utterly compliant. It creates permanent instability and fear, a state of constant motion and uncertainty.
Exactly. And the leader figure in this system.
Not just a dictator. The leader is presented as the infallible, necessary executor of that grand ideological law, the only one who truly understands and can implement it.
Which leads us to maybe the most disturbing part of her analysis, the concentration and extermination camps.
Yes. For Arendt, these were not just regrettable side effects or places to put enemies.
She calls them the essential institution of totalitarianism, the ultimate laboratory.
That's right. Laboratories for what? For proving the ideology's core belief.
Which was?
That human beings are, in fact, superfluous. That you could systematically strip people of everything that made them human.
How did the camps do that?
First, their legal rights, making them stateless, outside any law. Then, their moral personhood, through humiliation, torture, making moral choices impossible. And finally, their unique identity, reducing them to numbers, to identical suffering bodies, which she called mere things.
It was a process.
A deliberate, systematic process designed to demonstrate that individuality could be erased, that humans could be unmade, remade, or destroyed at will. This, horrifically, served to prove the ideology right within its own twisted logic.
It's a terrifyingly logical system built on an utterly insane premise.
That's a good way to put it.
Okay, let's try to pull out some key themes from this, things we can really hold on to. The first one has to be the sheer novelty of this kind of total domination.
Absolutely. We have to keep stressing. This is not just tyranny. Tyranny crushes opposition, but it often leaves private life alone. Totalitarianism wants to destroy the private sphere entirely. It invades every aspect of life.
So the reflection for us is we have to guard those private spaces, the space for individual thought, conscience.
Fiercely. That's where human freedom begins.
Okay, theme two, loneliness. You mentioned it as the precondition.
Yes. Totalitarian movements thrive on mass loneliness. Not just being alone, but feeling abandoned by all human connection, totally isolated. They offer a kind of fake, toxic community in return.
Which means what for us today?
It means we need to actively cultivate real community, strong social bonds, civic engagement. These aren't just nice extras. They're political necessities.
Yeah.
Isolation makes people vulnerable.
And theme three, this feels incredibly relevant right now. The right to have rights.
Arendt's profound insight. She argued that becoming stateless, a refugee, someone with no government to protect them, is the ultimate loss. Because human rights on paper mean nothing if there isn't a political community willing and able to guarantee them.
So your rights depend on belonging somewhere politically.
Essentially, yes. Which forces us to see refugee crises not just as humanitarian issues, but as fundamental political crises about who belongs to the community of rights bearers. It affects everyone.
And a final theme, ideology's power over reality.
Crucial. Totalitarianism's success depends on its ability to make people believe the ideology over their own eyes and ears, to destroy the distinction between fact and fiction, true and false.
The alternative facts problem, essentially.
Exactly, which underscores the desperate need today for critical thinking, for media literacy, for defending the very idea of objective reality.
Arendt really had a way with words, didn't she? Turning these complex ideas into unforgettable phrases.
She really did. Let's share a few key ones.
Okay, what's first?
Maybe this one. On the goal of totalitarian education or propaganda. The ideal subject of totalitarian rule is not the convinced Nazi or the convinced communist, but people for whom the distinction between fact and fiction and the distinction between true and false no longer exist.
Wow. It's not about belief. It's about confusion, about making thought impossible.
Right. And then connecting it back to our own lives, this observation on loneliness. What prepares men for totalitarian domination in the non-totalitarian world is the fact that loneliness has become an everyday experience of the ever-growing masses of our century.
That hits close to home, that sense of modern alienation being politically dangerous.
It's a stark warning. And maybe the most famous or infamous one, linked to her later work, but rooted here. The sad truth is that most evil is done by people who never make up their minds to be good or evil.
The banality of evil idea, that atrocities don't always need fanatical monsters.
Just requires people not thinking. People just following orders, fitting into the bureaucratic machine without considering the consequences, thoughtlessness as a political catastrophe.
So bringing this into the present day,
yeah.
How can we use Arendt's work practically? What are the warning signs she gives us?
Well, her framework is like a checklist for political dangers. We need to be really alert when we see certain things happening.
Like what?
Like the systematic scapegoating of particular groups, blaming them for everything.
Yeah.
The dismissal of objective facts, calling journalists enemies of the people, that kind of thing. Leaders claiming they, and only they, represent the true will of the people. And crucially, the erosion of independent institutions, courts, universities, the press.
Anything that could challenge the leader's narrative.
Exactly. These are all classic symptoms she identified.
And what about on a more personal, civic level?
Her work is a powerful call to defend the public sphere, actively. Freedom isn't something you just have, like a possession. It exists in the spaces between people when they come together to talk, argue, and act.
So the antidote to being an atomized mass is?
Is being an active citizen, participating, engaging, keeping those public spaces alive and vibrant.
And finally, thinking about policy, especially regarding refugees.
Her insight about the right to have rights is fundamental. It means we have to treat the problem of statelessness as a profound political challenge, not just a matter of charity. We need solutions that guarantee political protection, because without it, people are completely vulnerable.
This has been, well, heavy, but incredibly illuminating. A really vital deep dive.
It's a book that stays with you.
For me, the big takeaway is just how fragile freedom is. It's not the default state. It's something humans build and have to constantly maintain through talking, acting, thinking critically together. It depends on us showing up.
And for me, the lasting insight, maybe the scariest one, is that this potential for totalitarianism isn't some alien force. It arises from within modern societies. When our institutions get weak, when we become too isolated, too lonely, too willing to give up our judgment for easy answers.
So the defense isn't just external.
No. The biggest defense is internal. Maintaining our own capacity to think for ourselves, to make moral judgments even, or especially when it's difficult or unpopular.
A powerful thought to end on.
Indeed.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.